The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 17th of January, 2020. On the podcast today, I have Russ Mould, and he talks about five indicators to take the market's temperature. So is the market at a top? Are we going down, or is it going further up? We discuss those. Also on the podcast, two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see both these lists, in fact, top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
I'm very well, Justin. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yes.
Good. And, delighted to hear it.
Yes.
Plowing your way through January.
Yeah, exactly. It's been a big week, isn't it, for the old trade deal? Trump was there signing that deal, phase one.
Yeah.
What does that mean, phase one? You know,
well,
what do you think?
I think that, to be fair, and there's clearly been enormous relief that it has been signed, because stock markets have been pricing it in since the autumn when they started to run up very aggressively. It means that the tariffs that were promised for December aren't going on, which is good, and that China has agreed to buy some US agricultural products to try and take some of the heat out of the situation, which is good. However, there are still US tariffs on about $370 billion worth of Chinese goods. There's been no settlement yet on things like intellectual property and cyber theft, which was one of America's biggest beefs in the first place. Mm-hmm. And therefore, Trump is talking about phase two, but phase two, even he says, might not happen until after the presidential election in November. So there's still a lot more work to be done. Who's to say that China doesn't stick to it? And although I suspect at the moment they probably want a bit of a quiet life. And equally, who's to say Trump, having got a deal with China, now doesn't come back and start poking Europe with a stick? Because, you know, let's face it, aircraft are one of his big bugaboo topics there, because, you know, allegations of EU subsidies for Airbus, for example. And with Airbus now pulling in more orders than Boeing last year, albeit mainly because of Boeing's cataclysmically self-inflicted wounds. Mm-hmm. You know, it wouldn't be the biggest shock in the world if Trump was to come back to European cars, European planes and other things. So we might not be totally out of the woods, but at the moment markets are happy to think that we are.
Yeah. And also, that it's quite clever, I'm doing that, the tease. It's a tease, essentially, isn't it? You know, saying if you elect me again, we'll get phase two done. That'll be even better.
Well,
so
yeah.
It's that kind of thing, you know.
He's not that. A lot of people don't like him, but I think there's a certain businessman's animal cunning there. I think it's so. I'm looking forward to reading the book on his relationship with Deutsche Bank. I think that should be quite a giggle when it comes out, if that's your kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, listen. Everyone's, you know, like I said, the market or commentators seem to have changed their mind on the market somewhat. It's almost like a recession was priced in, wasn't it? It was nailed on pretty much. Last year we were saying about recession, end of 2020, probably 2021. And now it's fading in the distance somewhat, and people are looking almost bullish, you know, because five things here, five ways to take the market's temperature, and you come up with sort of five indicators, which is very interesting.
I think it's just looking at this issue of, are we going to get a recovery and inflation? Are we going to get a downturn and or deflation? And in the end, nobody knows. And let's face it, central bankers don't know, because if they knew, they wouldn't still have interest rates where they were 10 years ago, at levels that were described as extraordinary or emergency levels, and now they're the norm. And equally, the world clearly couldn't withstand US interest rates at 2.5% for more than 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's been a backtrack, and the Fed has cut rates three times. And last year, looking at www.cbrates.com, if you're a central bank spod, there were 131 interest rate cuts last year and just 21 interest rate increases.
Wow.
If the world was out of the woods, that wouldn't be happening, right?
Yeah.
So I think we need to be cognizant of that. But equally, equity markets are clearly working on the premise: A, lower interest rates are going to help; B, governments are now taking up the mantle with fiscal stimulus. You know, America is already spending money like it's tap water and running budget deficits that would make a banana republic blush. The UK is starting to, Boris Johnson and Sajid Javid have promised an expansionary budget, so let's see what we get in March. President for life Putin has just announced a fiscal stimulus package in Russia. You've had one in Japan, you've had one in Korea. You've got the European Central Bank talking about it. You've got the Democratic Party in America talking about modern monetary theory. So people are the markets are clearly expecting stimulus and growth, and therefore potentially inflation. But we don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. So, and the problem that we've got is, as investors, if you get inflation, deflation, or the middle ground of stagflation, they all kind of require different portfolio solutions. If you look at history, at least.
Yeah, or gold. So, get a bit of gold. That's it.
If you look at the 19, if you look at when we've had, the last 30 years have worked well in a fairly low inflation period, and things that have worked well have been bonds and generally equities. Mm-hmm. If you look during times of stagflation in the 1970s, the worst of all world, the only thing that really worked was gold, as you correctly say. And then during times of depression and recession, then you probably want to be in cash and you want to be in bonds because they're giving you some sort of guaranteed return and some greater capital safety. Now, clearly, given that nobody knows which is coming, that's why you get all these arguments having a diversified portfolio, whether it's 60-40 or with a little bit of cap, whatever. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I do is on my screen every day, I've just got these five checks that I look at. And I'm not saying that they're perfect, but they're a pretty good test of either economics or markets, risk appetite, or somewhere a combination between the two. And they are the copper price, transport stocks, small cap stocks, semiconductor stocks, and bank stocks.
Okay.
And at the moment, if you look at them, copper price is going up. Mm-hmm. Transport stocks have lagged over the last 12 months, but are starting to pick up speed now.
Well, let's go to the logic of the copper price. It's leveraged to growth, isn't it? If you're building anything,
cars, buildings, you name it, it's malleable, it's ductile. And it's therefore used in most industrial things that you can think about. And so if the copper price is good, that's generally a good sign, hence the nickname Dr. Copper. Copper was weak for a lot of last year. It's rallied late on, and it's still rallying now. So that's probably about a tick. Transport stocks, what's the logic here?
Let me just go back to the copper thing.
Oh, sorry.
Do you think that copper also now, it's even going to be, apparently, about three times as much copper in an electric car than compared to the older car.
Yep.
So that's going to have even more of an effect, isn't it, really?
There we go. So that's another possible help. Transport stocks, what's the logic? Well, this is Richard Russell's Dow theory. Mm-hmm. If the economy's going well, the shelves are being emptied and stock and inventory and shelves have to be refilled and that has to be shipped. Yeah. So that's it has to get on a plane, a train, a truck, a boat, whatever it happens to be. So if the economy is doing well, transport stocks will be doing well. Alternatively, if the economy is slowing down, inventories are piling up, less things have to be shipped. And all through last year, rather worryingly, transport stocks did not lead. The Dow Jones transport lagged the Dow Jones industrials. Historically not a good sign. It's starting to catch up again now and pick up some speed.
Interesting.
Fingers crossed. Though FedEx's statement before Christmas wasn't wildly encouraging.
Yeah.
Small cap stocks. The theory here is they're generally quite domestically focused. So again, they're a bit of an economic benchmark. They've got less protection from geographic spread. And also, in terms of market risk appetite, when people are feeling bullish, what do they tend to smash into? Small cap stocks.
Yeah.
And again, if you look at the US last year, the Russell 2000 lagged. If you look at UK, AIM lagged, albeit there are all sorts of reasons we could discuss why AIM has been lagging, whether it's governance or whatever. But, FTSE small cap lagged a bit, I think. And again, having lagged last year, since September, small caps have started to pick up speed and catch up, which we view as possibly being helpful. Silicon chip stocks, I always look at those for two reasons. One, semiconductors are everywhere. Smartphones, tellies, cars, smart meters, fridges, you name it, they're in it. And so industrial robots, so they're a pretty good guide to economic growth. It's a $400-500 billion global industry. It's not to be sniffed at. And also, semiconductor stocks, from a market perspective, are loved by momentum jockeys. They trade off earnings estimates going up, and they sell off on earnings estimates going down. And the SOX index, the Philadelphia Semiconductor Index, which you can track for free on the internet, is trading at pretty much an all-time high. I've gone up 60% last year, so that actually led the way. So again, from a market risk appetite, that tells you that it's risk on. And at the moment, it would suggest that the global economy is doing okay for all of the troubles that we've got. We've had with trade in the last year, and Taiwan Semiconductor, the world's biggest foundry, has just increased its capital investment budget for 2020, which is normally the encouraging sign. Though there are some signs that there have been some inventory build-up in the chip chain, so we do need to keep an eye on that. And then lastly, the one that's not really working at all at the minute is bank stocks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they did begin to move up a bit late last year, but they've lagged horribly, in fact, for 10 years. And this is what comes back to the, is the Western world turning Japanese? As I think we've discussed before, the Japanese banking index is 90% below where it peaked in 1989. Now, the Japanese index is probably about 40 or 50% below, but the bank stocks are down 90. Now, why is that? Well, if you think of quantitative easing in a zero interest rate or negative interest rate world, it's really hard for a bank to make money, because a bank makes money mainly from its net interest margin, borrowing money or funding itself at one level from deposits or other banks and lending it out at a higher rate. And what we've seen with QE and with ZIRP and with NERP is that crushes the yield curve. The gap between the rate at which you borrow, the rate at which you can lend out, collapses. Your margins under pressure and your ability to earn money is severely compromised. And you're seeing that in Western banks as well. You know, the FTSE All-Share Banking Index is 60% below its peak in 2006-07. So if the world goes Japanese, could go down a lot more. So, you know, if the if you do start to get inflation, interest rate increases, the global economy going off to the races, banks, it will show up in their P&Ls and their share prices pretty quickly, and it's not right now. So of those five indicators, you would say that, you know, most of them last year actually weren't brilliant, but stock markets kind of fought their way through it, helped by a big second half recovery, some of which is trade talk, some of which is Fed cuts, interest rate cuts worldwide, and some of which is the Fed's intervention in the repo market, shoveling out loads of $400 billion of the cheap money at the end of the year. Some of it is possibly based on, you know, legitimate earnings upgrades in things like chip stocks, for example, but it still means that we're not completely sure. You know, the market isn't completely clear cut, and therefore inflation, stagflation, deflation, central banks don't know. So it's best for us as investors not to put all of our bets on black or red or zero, because stagflation is so rare it's probably the zero on the roulette wheel, and take a balanced portfolio approach. Even if, you know, we don't feel entirely comfortable with bonds, because, you know, we know that central banks want to create inflation and they're probably not going to rest until they do. If the world does go West does go Japanese style, bonds will actually still be probably quite a good place to be, because they've been terrific in Japan for the last 30 years. So we just don't know. You know, yes, calibrate your risk between which view is your worldview, but I wouldn't, you know, suggest that you're going to be wise to go 100% all in on one or the other, because none of us have got a crystal ball. And, you know, it's the old quote from the philosopher Seneca, who was a Stoic, you know, I do not know what is going to happen, but I do know what is capable of happening. And none of this will give rise to any protestation on my part, because I am ready for everything. And that's what really good portfolios do for you. They, you know, leave you prepared for multiple outcomes, not just the one that you think is going to happen, because unfortunately you could be wrong.
Yeah. Do you know what? I often see people on Twitter sort of talking about stocks, and they often say, I think, in my opinion, or I think this. And I think, yeah, that's all opinion. What you don't know, if
I have no problem with that.
Yeah, I know. If they're suggesting something's going to happen, I think, well, if you knew what was going to happen, you wouldn't be investing. You'd be on your own island somewhere, you know?
And for all of your good listeners, they may have heard of, well, I've certainly probably heard of Howard Marks, the dope dealer who passed away a couple of years ago. They may not have heard of Howard Marks of Oak Tree Capital, one of the world's biggest bond managers. Mm-hmm. He puts a blog on his website for free. And there's a new one this week called You Bet, which for any investor, experienced or inexperienced, is must reading. Because he talks all about gambling, but he makes it very clear the differences between investing and gambling, but also the similarities, but also how you can take some of the betting and guessing out of your investing and why that is so important. And he says that investing is not about, to go back to your point, I think this is going to happen. Yeah. Because A, you might be wrong. And B, let's face it, there are a lot of very smart professional fund managers out there who may have got in ahead of you, because they've got more information than you have and they do it for a full-time living.
Yeah, well, do you know what? That's exactly what I said.
You can be right on the story, but wrong on the stock, because it's already priced in.
Yeah.
So he talks about why investing is about knowing what you know and being aware of what you don't know, and investing according to probabilities, not what you think is certain to happen.
Do you know what? I've been saying that to a lot of people, and I often say, listen, you can have a punt if you want on something. That's gambling. You know, if I don't think it's investing. And I said, in my mind, I don't particularly enjoy gambling that much anyway. Mates of mine do, and we often go to the horses, but they love it. And but they don't invest. And they said to me, well, you gamble in the stock market. I said, no, the difference is I can sway correct. I can sway the odds in my favour, hopefully, by research correct. And reading the stock market. With gambling, it's odds against straight away with the horses, you know, pretty much all the time, you know.
I mean, I bet on horses, and I can argue I can try and tilt the odds in my favour by studying the form and blah. Yeah. But in the end, the jockey can still fall off the horse. The jockey can make a mistake. The horse can have an off day.
And you also,
so you've got to be aware of that. Because then also with the bet, remember, it's a win or it's 100% loss.
Yes, exactly.
With an investment, that is not the case. You know, you can protect your downside, even if you are wrong in your thesis, by buying things at the right price, hopefully.
Yeah, and one other thing, you may have done all the research in the world on your one horse, but there are other horses in the race. you don't know how good they are.
This is the thing. Yeah. That's the thing. You know, so there are multiple factors to be considered, and you need to factor that into the odds. And with a stock, you can, you know, it's all about saying, oh, you know, I think this is a really good company, the shares are going up. No. Howard Marks calls that level one thinking. That's too simplistic, because there are so many professionals out there doing this. We can all spot a good market, a good stock really pretty quickly. You know, as Mark says, in, you know, the early 1970s, everybody owned IBM. And everybody was saying, well, we're going to be safe owning the Nifty 50 because they're the best companies in America. And they may have been the best companies in America at the time, but they turned out to be rubbish investments because they all went down by 50% to 90% during the next bear market because you'd piled in at the top.
Yeah. Price is everything, pretty much.
Valuation is everything.
Yeah, exactly. So
might not feel like it now in a bull market that's bombing along and feels like it's having a think about going into melt-up phase. If you look at share prices like Tesla in the last 2 weeks, which has gone up by what?
Yeah,
30-40% or something?
In the last couple of months, it's done about 100%, isn't it, in the last few
years? Yeah, and a lot of that, my guess is that a lot of that shorts throwing in the towel and just risk managers saying, okay, we might be right on fundamental grounds, but we're getting killed on the share price. Let's get out because the momentum jockeys are in charge here.
Yeah, and do you know what? I don't know who it was, but I think one of the most bullish guys on Tesla, he has been for a long time, quite early on, he's just gone underweight.
Morgan Stanley.
He's gone underweight and he said, right, that's it. Evaluation's silly. It's silly at this price. I'm out.
The problem is we all know the market room can remain irrational for a lot longer than you can stay solvent, as the old saying goes.
Do you know what? I get bearish I'm going to go cash and all this, I'm going to gold, and all the indicators are there that the market should fall over and roll over, but it doesn't. I mean, people have been saying this the last 5 years pretty much, you know, so it can continue to go up.
And I've been getting nervous for the last 2 or 3 years because everything's pointing in the one direction, which naturally makes you nervous. You know, it's probably, you know, last year probably proved it. When things look tricky, it actually was a good year to make money, you know. So
Russ, that's excellent. So maybe next week, if you could, or the week after, you talk about a balanced portfolio. Is it worth explaining what a balanced portfolio is?
Because
some people don't know what that is.
Yeah, and we can talk about that, no problem whatsoever.
Marvellous. Well, have a nice weekend then, Russ.
And you.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Allied Mines, ALM ticker, up 3.65% to 54 pence. At 4, Open Orphan, down 4.44% to 6.45 pence. At 3, ITM Power, it's down 1.45% to 119.25. At 2, Anglo Asian Mining, that's 143 at the moment, hardly moving, 0.35%. And number one most followed company is Rockfire Resources. That's Rock is the ticker, of course. Non-mover today at 0.85 pence. All right, top five most liked and or most read RNSs. We are at five. It is Keras Resources, corporate update. At four, Live Company Group trading and operational update. At three, it's Open Orphan. That's, what is it, Schedule 1. There's quite a few there. Offer wholly unconditional. And also, at number one, it's Encon Dizzy Energy. So it's three there from Open Orphan, all liked. So let's go straight to number one. It's Power Tariff Process Update. It's Encon Dizzy Energy. And at the moment, that's down 5.4% to 5.25 pence. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.